Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the third day of April, Anno Domini 2021. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
He does exist, folks.
He does exist. And at 8 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing loose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. First, though, to those of you in the Western Catholic tradition, happy Easter. But whatever you celebrate during the vernal equinox, we wish our best to you. And I know that those of you in the Eastern Catholic Church are not celebrating till May, Easter till May. But, you know, get yourself a bunny.
Actually, I've read a lot of pet stores stop selling rabbits around Easter time.
Yeah.
Because it's the most returned thing, or not even returned. Most of them will just get abandoned a week or three later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or they'll let them go. They let them think, oh, they're a wild animal anyways. They can do it. No, they were
raised in captivity.
Domesticated. Yeah.
All right, AT&T.
I'm missing headphones, that's why.
That's why you can't hear anything. AT&T is lobbying against proposals to subsidize fiber-to-the-home deployment across the U.S., arguing that rural people don't need fiber and should be satisfied with internet service that provides only 10 megabits per second upload speeds.
If you can get even that on dial-up.
Exactly. AT&T's Executive VP Joan Marsh details the company's stance in a blog post entitled Defining Broadband for the 21st Century. AT&T's preferred definition of a 21st century broadband could be met with wireless technology or AT&T's VDSL, a 14-year-old system that brings fiber to neighborhoods but uses copper telephone wires for the final connection into each home. There would be significant additional cost to deploy fiber to virtually every home and small business in the country. When at present, there's no compelling evidence that those expenditures are justified over the service quality of a 50, 10, or 120 megabit per second product, Marsh wrote. That would be 50 megabits download speed to 10 meg upload or 100 meg download to 20 meg upload. AT&T said that overbuilding areas that already have acceptable speeds, end quotes around overbuilding, would, on that quote again, needlessly devalue private investment and waste broadband-directed dollars, unquote. Overbuilding is what the broadband industry calls one ISP building in an area already served by another ISP, whereas internet users desperate for cheaper, faster, and more reliable service call that broadband competition.
Yeah, heaven forbid there's no competition to drive prices down.
Exactly.
Third world countries have faster internet service than us.
Yes, they do. The U.S. subsidizing deployment of symmetrical 100 megabit per second speed, that is 100 megabit for both upload and download, would help other ISPs bring fast broadband to areas where AT&T still uses old phone lines that have fallen into disrepair because AT&T hasn't properly maintained them. AT&T could bid for the funding too, of course, but it doesn't want to build fiber throughout rural areas. AT&T previously said it is deploying fiber to 3 million more homes and businesses this year, but the company is only doing so in metro areas and mostly in those metro areas where AT&T already built out most of the infrastructure and can get a better return on investment. There are tens of millions of homes without fiber in AT&T's 21-state wireline service area. AT&T has been fighting against increases in broadband speed benchmarks for years. Back in 2014, AT&T urged Federal Communications Commission to keep its standard of 4 megabit per second download and 1 megabit per second upload. Well, that's certainly enough for email. Shut up. AT&T claimed at the time that even 10 megabit per second download would exceed what many Americans need today.
Post office might even beat them.
Yeah, exactly. But the FCC, don't get your hopes up. But the FCC raised the standard to 25 megabits per second down and 3 megabits per second up in January 2015, which I personally think is ludicrously low. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is how's your internet speed? And your choices are, my speed is great. My speed is not great when everybody's home. My speed is just too slow. I don't even use all the speed I've got. And, of course, other. And if you said other, please head on over to our forum at soundbites.org. That is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under fascinating stuff. You'll see the forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 3/21. How's your internet speed? So far, there's only two of us who posted in that, and we welcome you to do that. And also, please vote in the poll. I'd like to see it. Last week, we did a decent little number. I'd like to see us beat that this week. It only takes a minute of your time. You can see at our website, then the upper left there, where it says in big red letters, take the poll here.
Yeah.
Click on that, and you're
part of it.
And you're in it. And, of course, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And listen, if you're going to call about this story, you are not going to call and whine about not having green light in your house. Go read the forum before you make that call. But we would like to hear from you how you feel about your internet speed. And look, I get it. If all you do is email and some light web searching, then yes, yeah, this the kind of internet speeds that AT&T deigns to give you is fine. But almost nobody does that anymore, particularly in rural areas. One of the only ways they have to stay in touch with people is through, particularly these days, is through video chatting. And telemedicine is getting bigger and bigger, particularly for people in rural areas. And that involves high-speed, high-definition video.
Well, doctors are loving that because they can sit there and talk to their patients, you know, and spend the time with them and see them a little more often. Because that's the whole problem. Getting some of the elderly folks in for an appointment can be a challenge. Because, no, I don't feel like it. Well, if they're sitting in the comfort of their own homes,
right,
it's a lot easier to set it up.
One of the things we're starting to see, as you all may know, I work with a startup called Mastermind Lounge, and it's basically video stuff. One of the things we're seeing is that psychologists, not psychiatrists yet, but psychologists, are using it to talk to patients who cannot or will not come in. Then they can do a half-hour session or a one-hour session or whatever they want with people from the comfort of their own home.
And they feel a little more secure being in their own home, and it's only, you know, one-on-one with them. And
although when you are doing a video chat, do remember your camera's on and other people are watching, and don't go to the bathroom, don't pick your nose.
Well, these are, of course, one-on-one private sessions.
Yeah.
And the big thing about our platform is it's super secure, and people pay super securely before they even get in, and blah, 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 blah. But it's that security, which Zoom and several others don't have.
Yeah. They've even used that in plot points on TV shows. There was a 911 episode where someone in a conference call choked on a sandwich and collapsed. No one knew where he physically was because he was at his house. And so they're all trying to call 911 and wherever they're at and trying to track down where he is. And of course, because it's a TV show, they find him and save him.
Right, of course.
But it was kind of interesting. And then they did all the memes. Someone didn't have pants on. They just had a suit jacket on. Someone tried to go to the bathroom and did all the memes in one scene. They had a checkbox.
They had a checkbox. I will say without mentioning any names that I did do a video chat with a number of people, one of whom in the middle got up and went to the bathroom, which is fine, except the bathroom was right in line of sight, and that
didn't
person did not close the door.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Because they wanted to hear the meeting.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you can mute the mic.
So, of course, I took a screenshot and sent it to that person privately. Said, don't do this next time.
Yeah, just turn off your camera.
It's really all you have to do.
I like the meme going around that that Zoom video conferencing these days are modern-day seances.
Yeah.
I'm feeling someone trying to connect. Helen, are you there?
Can you hear us?
Are you muted? Can you hear us? Helen?
Yeah, exactly. But I think that, you know, this is going to be part of the new normal. I firmly believe that even after all of this nonsense is done, that we're going to find that lots of people are going to continue to do video chatting.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of companies are going to continue to let people work from home.
If you don't have to pay for an office space or, you know, lease
lighting,
rent
heating,
all
the equipment. Yeah, the
footage,
lighting,
right, exactly. You're not paying for, you pay, most companies pay a certain amount of money for upkeep of the parking lot.
When I was at a large company, they estimated it was double your salary.
Yes.
So for every person they hired, you paid them a salary. You paid them just about that same amount in their office space, their computer leasing, their telephone, their parking lot, all that other stuff.
So I tried to do this when I was working, but at the time it was not a common thing. I was perfectly willing to let some of our people, not all of them, because we did tech support. We had to be there to work on machines. But like the guy who was my web guy, right? He wanted to move to Florida. I didn't have a problem with that. Yeah. He could live in Florida. I would have paid for his computer and his internet connection. It still would have been cheaper for the company.
Yep.
Yeah. Much cheaper for the company, as a matter
of
fact.
The one thing I can see happening is, all right, businesses, you know, are finding that it's easy for, you know, companies to, you know, all right, reduce your space, you know, just have a couple of small offices. What I can see happening is where all of a sudden these businesses were having large meeting rooms so that a company could rent a meeting room and then you could call in all your employees. You just rent that room for, say, a day or whatever, just to get together, get caught up, and have a, you know, a monthly meeting or whatever, and just rent that space out.
My daughter works for a company in Arizona, and she's here in Rochester.
Yeah.
Oh. And it works great. It works great.
Until you physically have to touch the computer to remove something, or if their problem is my internet isn't working.
Well, she's not a computer.
Really, right, yeah, they can't really call in.
Right. No, so there are certain things that you will always have to be there for. But for what my daughter does, there's absolutely no reason she couldn't do it from anywhere on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, she said, you know, she's got some friends across the country. She's going to go visit them when she, you know, when she can.
Yep.
Right. So, but she said, I've already checked with all of them. I know how well their internet works.
Mm-hmm.
So I can go there and work. And nobody in her job will care.
And they don't. Yeah, they don't. All they care about, bottom line, is that it's getting done.
The stuff gets done. As long as it gets done, they don't care where she is or where she's doing it. Very enlightened company. Very smart move on their part, because she's happy. They're not paying for office space.
Yeah.
It all works out.
I've read a lot of stories about companies in Silicon Valley where real estate has skyrocketed. You can't find an apartment under, you know, $2,000 a month in San Francisco, that most of those people don't physically need to be there. It's all computer work, and distance would be fine.
Yep. But there's still, you know, particularly for people my age, hate to say it, you old fogies, they worry that if they're not watching people, they aren't going to work. And I've always said the internet is an amplifier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It makes good employees better and bad employees worse.
Less sick time, too.
And I want my bad employees to get worse,
so
because then it's easier to get rid of them.
You think people aren't slacking off in their job when you don't walk by anyway? There was a Seinfeld episode where he scattered birdseed on his desk.
Yeah.
And left the window open. So the pigeons came in and clack, 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 clack. So every time the boss walked by, he'd hear clack, 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 clack.
Yeah, that's actually an old story.
Yeah.
But
until the grass grows in your keyboard.
Right. And how many games had a boss key, if you remember those?
Yeah.
You
pop
hear
up
your
a
boss
spreadsheet.
Coming in and pops up a spreadsheet.
There was one that listed computer stores in Rochester.
Nice.
It must have been a local game.
Yeah, exactly. all right. Anyway, we've kept the lines. I hope Wayne was patient. This is Wayne from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Wayne. What's up?
Well, I have actually two questions, and they're kind of related.
Yeah.
The first one is I went to click and drag a file, and I got it to the other location, and it disappeared.
And it's a what?
It disappeared.
Oh.
You probably missed. I do that all the time.
Yeah, you might have dropped it somewhere else.
It's probably on your desktop.
Well, I looked there, and it's not there. I did. I use Linux, so I use locate, and it's not to be found. And I'm kind of wondering what may have happened to the situation.
What operating system are you using?
I'm using Ubuntu.
Interesting. I have never honestly seen that, so let me think for a minute. You were dragging from one folder to another, or from the desk?
I was going from basically one directory to another directory.
In two separate windows or in one window?
In two separate.
Yeah, usually.
Can you search the hard drive for that particular file that you were trying to drag?
Yes, I used the locate function.
Did you update the database before you did that?
Reindex?
You have to reindex the locate database.
Oh.
And you do that with sudo, S-U-D-O.
Right.
Make me sandwich.
Space, update DB, all one word, update DB database.
Because now it's in a different folder. It doesn't know where it moved
to. Right. So it cannot find it.
Because it's confused.
Right. In fact, any time that you want to do a locate, if you've added files or moved files, you have to update the database. It updates it overnight automatically. But if you want to do it in the middle of the day, you have to do it by hand. And that's sudo update DB.
There's probably a way to automate that or change the timing schedule so it does it every four or five hours.
You need it so rarely. Why waste the... Particularly if you've got a...
how big your drive is and a lot of files.
How big your drive is, and if it's an SSD drive, you don't need the wear and tear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just a sudo update DB and then do a locate.
Okay. Now, my second question is kind of related to it. In Linux, when you use /dev/null,
yeah,
what exactly is happening there?
Okay. So first, everything in Linux is a device.
Right.
Everything is a device, and everything essentially is a file because devices are files.
Okay.
So the null file is just a bit bucket. It goes nowhere. It essentially just lets it fall out the back of the computer onto the floor.
Well, actually, as far as doing it, I mean, is it something that just takes whatever it is, puts it like into RAM, and then when you shut off the computer, it's gone?
No, even more than that. It just completely ignores it. So if you were to send data to that file, and the idea behind dev null is that this particular program is going to produce output. It's got to go somewhere, but you don't care about it. You just want it to disappear.
It's like throwing it out the back window.
Yep. So dev null is like opening a window and just tossing it out.
Throwing it out and don't care where it lands.
And it disappears on the way down so you don't even pollute.
Into the void.
Yeah, dev null just basically goes to what it thinks is a file, but the computer's just dumping those bits, just erasing them. They're gone forever. They're not even saved anywhere in any way, shape, or form.
And unlike moving something to the trash, you can never get it back again.
Right.
How does that happen? I mean, that it actually just puts it in some place and it's totally gone.
Well, it doesn't save the file. It doesn't keep it in memory. It doesn't save it to the drive. Every byte that comes in, unless you do something with that byte, it goes.
It's not part of the file allocation table.
Right. It just doesn't save it anywhere. I can't make it any plainer. It just disappears.
It's like deleting it, but it doesn't sit in the trash waiting for you to undelete it.
Every byte that comes in is immediately deleted.
Okay.
That's all that happens to it. I send an A to dev null, and that A gets deleted.
It's like evaporated.
Yeah.
Why would you want to use DevNull instead of putting it in the trash where you could recover it later?
But the point is, sometimes, particularly when you're automating something, something you do produces a text, say, that says, everything went fine. Well, I don't need to see that.
Yeah.
And I don't need to store it anywhere.
I only want to know when it didn't go fine.
Yeah. I only want to know when it didn't go fine.
So throw it in
your program, you write, if the result was 200, fine, or zero, whatever comes back is fine, then take all the rest of the text you got and just send it to DevNull. I don't need it. I don't want to see it.
I've seen that in a lot of logs. You know, completed successfully, completed successfully, completed successfully.
Right.
Well, okay, out of 1,000 completed successfully, I want to find the one that says failed.
Well,
that's hard.
That's a separate issue.
Yeah.
Yes. But basically, so you can send all that stuff to DevNull, and then it doesn't necessarily show up in the log.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Now I understand a little bit better.
There you go.
Excellent. Well, listen, thank you very much, guys, and have a good day.
Thank you, Wayne. Have fun.
You too. Take care.
Yeah. DevNull is just a place where things go to disappear forever. They don't even die because there's no corpse.
Then, of course, there was the DevNull character that Leo Laporte created on Tech TV in 1996, which was a Max Headroom-like character.
Right.
One of the very, very early sort of real-time animations where they had one camera and then applied an effect and then broadcasted it almost immediately.
Yeah. It's also called the Null Device. And it's exactly that. It's the device you send stuff to when you don't want it anymore.
It's an interesting concept that zero and null are different.
Yes, they are.
But zero and nil are the same.
Right. But yeah, so you can, and every operating system has a dev null. So you can take output that you don't really care about at all and send it there. So that's pretty easy. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. And I'm glad to say, as much as I enjoyed having Michael Oden and Dennis Worster here, I am delighted to say that we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Did you suddenly reach puberty in the middle of that broadcast?
I don't know why. All of a sudden, I ran out of breath.
You're allowed to breathe in once in a while.
Yeah,
that's
really
allowed.
Well, that's the thing. You know, I was trying to go between the screens, and the one screen here was refreshing, so it was a little slow, but...
Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm still Dave Enright.
Yeah, I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Dave Enright. Yeah.
At least there was no S word in that forecast.
Well,
that was a heck of an April Fool's joke, Rochester.
Really? I was...
It's 36 minutes after the hour. We're sound bites.
Let's get the legal stuff in.
Ah. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. Hi, Fred. What's up?
Hey, I'm a member and listen often. And I was taking your advice. I was trying out Google Docs and Google Sheets.
Yep.
And some of the things that I normally do in Google Docs is available, I suppose. One thing I tried was a show because I like to look at the show hide feature to see how I got where my cursor is.
Right.
Whether I made a notebook on the space bar and there's 100 space bars clicks. So it's an add-on in Docs.
Okay.
Then I got a message in email saying that, or a message coming up that something access my Google account, and I didn't know if that was safe or not, so I blocked it, changed the password, and later figured out that it was in fact the add-on. Are those add-ons safe?
It depends on where you get your add-ons.
Right off the Google page?
Then yes.
Well, the Google Play Store, yes. A Google search, maybe.
Right. Go ahead.
If you click on the add-ons in the Google Sheets,
Right.
That's what comes up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Those are definitely safe. Those are okay.
So they're okay to let them have access to the Google account?
Yes.
And many times they have to be able to access your documents so that they can do what you want.
Right. So you clicked on add-ons and then get add-ons, and that's where they came from.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, you're okay there.
Okay. Because it accesses the Google account every time I use it.
Yeah. Let me just say those are about 99.999% okay.
Every now and then Google finds some bad ones and will automatically delete them.
Right.
Okay.
So if you lose one, that's what happened. But generally speaking, they've been there for quite a while and have been vetted over and over and over again. So they're safe.
Okay. And theoretically, you can't control which services they have access to, can you? So theoretically, if you put an ad into the Sheets app, it can see your email because that's your Google account.
Right.
Right.
So you can't say just allowed in Sheets.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know that.
Maybe. I hope they fix that if you can't.
Didn't see that option.
Docs need your permission. Acknowledge terms of service. All right, go ahead. What does it tell me? It says use this account. Okay. And it now says, okay, so here it is. It tells you what it can do, but you can't pick what those things are.
So you have a choice. So if it says it can access your email, you'd have to decide if you want to allow that or not.
Right. So this says view and manage documents that this application has been installed in, connect to an external service, and then you can hit the information button to say what one it can connect to. And then display and run third-party comment. And I will now say, of course, not comment, content. Display and run third-party content. So I will now say no. But that's my choice. So you get to make that choice before you connect. This goes right back to being click-happy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You get people who just want to use the thing. So they're like, yeah, okay. But you really need to run. So, for example, in that one of the things it said was that it would be able to display content in your document. Well, yes, because what I was trying to install was a thing that made it easy to put in accented characters. So, of course, it has to be able to display things in your document because it's got to be able to put the accented character in. But when you look at the information box, it says it can pull in anything from any website it wants to. Oh, no, thank you.
Yeah, really.
I'll now try to find a different thing.
Yeah.
That does that. And, of course, there's actually a way to make that happen inside Google Docs by itself anyway. So,
in the latest macOS and iOS stores, apps now have to disclose all the personal information they track.
Right.
And what they do with it.
Right.
As more and more apps are coming online doing that, it's just astounding what some of the apps are requesting and what some of the apps actually collect about you. So you know, when you're looking for apps now, and because it's happening in the Apple side, it's probably happening in the Android and Google side as well.
Oh, right? For sure.
So it's a really good idea to start looking at, and here's what permissions they want, here's what data they track about you, and here's what they do with that data.
Right.
It's not the general, we just make your experience better.
Right.
No, we take all your contacts.
Yeah.
Yeah, we take all the contacts out of your email and send them a message saying that you should try this new program because you like it.
Right.
No, I think I'll say no to that option.
Exactly.
Is there a way to show non-printing characters in Google Docs without going through that add-on?
Non-printing characters, I think.
Well, that goes back to a couple of weeks ago when who prints anymore?
Well, yeah,
but
yeah.
Some
yeah,
of us
yeah,
do,
you
yeah.
See it on the screen. You can see carriage returns or enter shows up as a paragraph symbol.
Yep.
Space bar shows up as dots.
Right.
Then if my cursor ends up on the opposite side of the page and know how I got there, you know, whether tabs or spaces or.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if, and maybe somebody can post that in the forums too, or give us a call if they use one like that.
In years gone by, I had someone come to me. They lost their entire document. They had their notebook sitting on the space bar, and it went down several pages.
Just pushed everything down, yeah.
And they thought they lost it, and I just hit the undo button, and then...
Right. Do you need... which one did you install?
The one called Show?
That's the one. That seems to be okay. But again, you know, you have to make your decision.
Yeah,
so
I'd like it to be there without having to go through all that.
Yeah, no, that's
not
happening.
Life's not that easy.
Wish it were, but it's not. Yeah. That's not happening.
Okay. Well, I'll keep messing with it and see what other questions I come up with for you. So thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. Yeah, this is. There are just a couple of little differences. Among these things, and it is what it is. Oh, look,
I just found a neat one called mapping sheets, where it can take a list of data and generate a map of them all. That's kind of neat.
It does what?
It generates a map
of what?
Of a list of data.
Oh, nice.
So you feed a membership list into it, and you get a map of where everyone lives.
Oh, that's very cool.
I've seen websites that have done that. In the past, but it's, now you can do it yourself on your own computer.
Nice. And that's in Google Sheets?
In Google Sheets, yeah.
Nice. Put that on the thing, will you?
All right. Let's see. What can it do? It can view and manage my spreadsheets, yes. It can connect to an external service. Yeah, okay.
Well, it kind of has to get the data.
Yeah. It can run when I'm not present.
I don't like that.
I don't like that.
Yeah.
Especially, well, if the sheet's not open, if the sheet is open, I could see it running. But if the sheet is closed, it shouldn't be. Display and run third-party web content. Ads. run when you're not present. Let me see. Yeah, there's no additional information. Allow this application to run when you are not present. So how does it know I'm present or not? How do you define that?
Key input.
Keystrokes?
Probably keystrokes.
Hmm.
If the document's not open, you're probably not present.
Yeah.
Well, that's
so that would make
safe
sense.
To
yeah,
say,
when the document
yeah.
is open, it has to run, so you have to give it that permission.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, let's head back to the phones. Our next caller is Mike from Caledonia, New York. Hi, Mike. What's up?
Hi, how you doing, guys?
Peachy, how are you?
Okay, pretty good. A while ago when Google Music Play came on, I started uploading all my songs to that. I have like 800-plus CDs, and it was great because they organized by album or genre or artist. Then when they switched to Yahoo Music, they got rid of that. And so now it's just one list of CDs, of songs. So then I decided I'd try a different service, and I went to pCloud here, and you guys talk about it. And they seem to be able to do these, being able to sort it the way I would like to sort it. I downloaded a bunch of music, went to play it, and lo and behold, no, they don't have that function available yet. So then I am looking now for a service that will work on my iPhone that will play pCloud music.
Well, pCloud is just a file server. It doesn't do anything else but store files.
Right. But on my computers, if I click on an album, it will go to, on my MacBook Air, it will go to VLC, and it will play them through that. On my Linux computer, it will play it from pCloud, but pCloud says, and they're in OGG files, and pCloud says they do not support the OGG file yet.
Yeah, so, that may be a problem. But see, pCloud does have its own music player.
Oh, it does.
Right.
And you can
play OGG
on their website.
Right, but it doesn't do OGG files yet.
But VLC should on the iPhone as well.
Right, but when I click on, let's say, a song on my pCloud, VLC doesn't start up.
You probably have to open it first.
There
may be a way to set it as a default media player. Because it has been very hard to change default applications for stuff that Apple already has. But they have started loosening that up a little bit so you can make Google Chrome your default web browser instead of Apple Safari. I don't know if they've done that for the music player yet.
Okay, all right.
So you may have to open VLC first.
Well, when I have done that, and it still doesn't start, and when I go to where it says cloud services that it supports, they don't list pCloud. And online, it says you can select anyone and add it, any cloud service and add it. But on the iPhone, you can't. They say in online, it says the little cone that they have as their logo should be in the upper left-hand corner of my screen, and on the iPhone, it's not.
What iOS are you running?
It's the newest one. I just updated the other day, which...
14.2 something or other.
Yeah.
I'm looking on... So it would be a VLC program feature to add a third-party cloud drive.
Right.
And I'm looking on their website to see how you do that.
Now, other than VLC, are there any other third-party that I could use on the iPhone?
Offhand, I don't know of any, and partly because the iTunes Media Player is built in, but there might be some other ones.
Right now,
I just did a search. I saw one called Player Extreme. It has a 4.6 rating with about 50,000 reviews.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just looking at my music right now. It can certainly play MP3s.
Right. But unfortunately, when I did the Google Music Play, I put them all up as OGG files.
So right. Player Extreme does OGM and OGV. So that's what, probably OGG Music and OGG Video?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, when I click on an MP3, it opens up. Oh, no. Hold on.
You opened us.
I'm playing two things at once. Why am I, how do I, what the hell?
You've got a YouTube window open somewhere.
Yeah,
okay.
Playing us back.
So does I?
Yeah, it's playing. I'm playing an OGG right now.
Well, you're on the web. So that's one thing you could do on the iPhone is you go to the pCloud website rather than try to do it in an app.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I'm definitely playing it from. It's definitely an OGG, and it's definitely playing from the web version of pCloud.
Mm-hmm. Now they had told me pCloud. Tech service told me to go to my.pcloud.com and it would play my music. And for some reason, I can't get it to play my music that way either.
From what program?
My.pcloud.com, their website.
Yeah, that's where I am right now.
Yeah, and it wouldn't play my music for some reason.
Huh. Honestly, that I don't know because I just played a song.
Is there a sub format in the codec that it might not like? You know, 96-bit versus 128-bit, maybe?
I don't know.
I save my OGGs as high as I can, so...
Yeah. And for the rest of us, what is an OGG file?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It was supposedly better than MP3.
Yeah, it's a better compression. It's a open source, isn't it?
And it's an open source file,
unencumbered by patents like MP3 is.
Right. Okay.
Right. It's basically from the XIPH, however you pronounce that, ZIF, Zeiss, whatever it is, and it doesn't stand for anything. There's a computer game called NetTrek where they do OGGing. You would probably know that. I do not, and that's where the name comes from. But anyway, it's a container. The OGG is a container for music, video, text. So you can have OGG video. OGG Theora is a
video
player.
So there you go. So OGG's the container. So what codec did you use inside the OGG?
Right. There's video OGG, audio OGG, application OGG. So I don't, honestly, without seeing your file, I can't tell you what the issue is.
Right.
But I do know that pCloud will play, at least the web-based version of pCloud will play OGG files.
Yeah, they said that the app didn't support it.
There you go.
But that's why I was trying to get another player that I like what happens when I use my MacBook Air. I start a song in Pequod, and all of a sudden VLC takes over and plays the song.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's what I was hoping to happen with VLC on my iPhone, but it doesn't seem to be working.
You could try the Player Extreme and see if that does it. I think it was free.
Okay.
I lost my window again. PCloud says they can play Ag Vorbis and Ag Opus.
But not on the iPhone.
On the cloud. On the iPhone, yes.
Really?
According to their website, it does.
Yeah, because when I've been texting them back and forth for 2 weeks now, and they say that the OGG files are not supported on the app.
No, not on the app, on the web.
Oh, yes, on the web, definitely they do. Yeah, they do play on the web. And that, like I was saying, though, I went to mypcloud.com, which is their web address they told me to go to, and I still can't get them to play.
Take a look at a program called Cloud Beats.
Okay.
It says it's offline music, but it will play from Cloud Drive. It says MP3 and FLAC, so.
Yeah.
It may well be that does Apple not have the
I don't believe the Apple players have Ogg built in, so that's why you have to use third party.
Gotcha. Okay.
but according to the pCloud website, the pCloud web will play an Ogg file.
Yeah, it does.
It did. It did for me.
Yeah, I was just trying to get it to work on my iPhone through the app.
Yep.
So okay, well, thank you very much for your help.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, take a look at Cloud Beats anyway.
And if someone else has an idea,
please give us a call.
Yeah.
585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we will. Sorry, Dave tried to hand me this thing, and my shoulder just stopped moving right there. I have it's highly arthritic, and with the weather changing the way it is, it just stopped. I had to give it an extra little push to get.
Definitely, I know what you're talking about. Same with my shoulder, the one that I dislocated. All of a sudden, now with the weather and that,
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hiya, Mark. What's up?
I feel your pain. I'm going through the same thing.
Yep.
it's terrible. Funny, that call that I was listening to while I was waiting for the gentleman, I had a problem with Amazon Music.
Oh, yeah.
I loaded it to my device, and I wanted to use the offline feature when I was done using the online feature, and it said that my SD card was offline. And I messed around. I couldn't get it figured out. So I called them, and they said, they'd have to work on it because they don't know what was going on after going through all the stuff. So I waited 3-4 days, hadn't heard anything from them. And I figured, you know what, let me reformat my SD card. So I saved everything. And I realized when I formatted it as part of the internal memory. So I said, well, let me format it as storage. I formatted it as storage. Boom. Came back online.
There you go.
So I beat them at troubleshooting. So when they got a hold of me, finally, I told them, well, I fixed the problem already. So then they asked me for the fix because they wanted log files. And I said, you don't need them. I fixed it. So they said they were going to send it to the development team. I said, there's a lot of people with phones that don't have a lot of memory, and sometimes you have to do that, whether you want to or not. Load it as part of the internal memory, so you have enough.
Right.
And they said, well, we're going to work on that. So if anybody's having that problem with Amazon Music, try it as storage only.
Right. Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay.
This is one of the problems that we're having all across the board as more and more people put their music online and their videos online and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If you don't have unlimited data, you run out of data. You start paying extra for your data. And, of course, even if you have unlimited data, it slows down after a certain amount of time. And so you have to, you suddenly, instead of getting whatever speed you're getting like half a megabit per second. It's AT&T. They love you.
It's unlimited downloads, not unlimited speeds.
Right, exactly. And that's a problem that a lot of places are having. So you got to be aware, you know, when if you're not paying for unlimited data, you got to pay attention to how much data you're using and what you're using it for. But nowadays, let's be honest, we all use lots and lots and lots of data. There's not much you can do about that. So be very aware of that sort of thing.
The cellular chip in my phone isn't working at the moment, which makes driving directions tricky.
Yeah.
Well, the GPS is working.
Right.
But GPS is delayed. So sometimes I've passed the street when the GPS realizes it and says turn left.
Oh, yeah. You should have turned there.
Yeah. Well, no, it says turn left on Craig Road. Well, I passed Craig Road like 10 seconds ago.
What GPS system are you using?
Yeah, my iPhone. It's a really old iPhone. It's all beat up and worn out.
I was going to say, Waze would do you a lot better.
Well, no, it requires internet.
Right.
I don't have internet on my phone.
Right. That's his problem. Can't do what you can't do. I know. Well, he's just got to get a new phone.
I haven't got around to replacing it yet. It still mostly works.
I get it. It mostly works except as a phone.
No, the phone calls work when I have Wi-Fi.
Okay. We're going to leave Steve in his own world, wherever that is. I hope the sky is clear in that world. We're going to take a quick break, actually a slightly longer break, because our first hour is done. But we got a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe on your way. It's Soundbites with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. We'll be back in just a few minutes. So take a little bio break or whatever, and we'll be back with a whole lot more show on Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. You're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Back to the phones. We've got a couple people backed up, so we'll try to get to them as much as possible. Our next caller is Dan from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Dan. What's up?
Hey, how you doing? I want to commend you guys for being on the air for 31 years and 7 months and 0 days.
Thank you very much. It's our 7 month anniversary today.
Well, congratulations, and you guys have done a wonderful service for the computing community.
Thank you very much.
Okay, this question's for Steve Ray.
Yeah.
Steve? Okay. I have an iPhone. It's been factory reset by AT&T, let's say on January 1st of 2021. At the same time, after they did the reset, they restored a previous version of a backup. Let's say it was dated June 1st of 2020. Will that change the factory reset date on the phone to June of 2020, or will it keep it at January 2021?
The date on the phone will change to today's date all the time.
Which date on the phone?
The factory reset date is the one that I'm looking at.
That's never saved anywhere. It doesn't care when you last reset it.
Yeah, because it goes for the current date and time.
No, does it say anywhere in the setup this phone was reset on January.
Not that I've ever seen.
Yeah, it does record it.
Where?
Let me see if I can find it. Hold on.
You can see the date of your last backup.
You can see a date of factory reset. Of course, you can't find it right away, but...
There is a date of first activation that is shown in the Apple service system that I can see as a service provider.
Apparently, you can go to settings, cellular, which may be why you can't find it. Scroll all the way to the bottom. It will tell you when your iPhone was last reset.
No, that's just your cellular. Yeah, that's your cellular statistics on how much data you have used. That has nothing to do with erasing the phone or the reset of the OS. That resets your statistics.
Okay. According to Apple, however, it says that's the date your iPhone was last reset.
Right. Your iPhone's cellular settings were last reset. I'm on the same support document.
Okay.
So it's just the cellular.
Right. It tracks how much you've downloaded over cellular. So generally you reset that every month. So you can see how much you've used this month so you don't go over your monthly cap.
So it has absolutely nothing to do with the factory reset.
The factory software reset, the OS reset, yes, correct.
Correct, it has nothing to do with it.
Right, okay. It's only the last time you reset your cellular statistics.
Okay.
Oh, okay. So that's what that little line at the bottom means, huh?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All righty. Yeah, so most people will try to keep track. If you don't have unlimited data, you keep track of how much data have you used, and you can reset your statistics at the beginning of your billing month to see that you don't go over your, say, 10 gigs that month. We see a lot of phones where people never bother doing that, and the statistics haven't been reset in 3 years, and it shows, you know, hundreds of gigs used in multiple years. Or there's one of my wife's before we went on our trip. I reset her statistics to see how much mapping data we would use over cellular. And she had used 10 megs of data in about 3 years since she got her phone.
Wow.
Because she's always on Wi-Fi, never uses cellular data.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Robert from Rochester, New York. Hi, Robert. What's up?
Hi. I'm running Windows 10 on my PC. And when I open a folder... the window comes up, and in the past, there used to be the status bar on the bottom, okay? Yeah. And I know how to toggle that on and off. You go to view and folder options and so on and so forth. Well, I do that, and no status bar. And I went to, you know, I researched this on the web, and I go to the registry, and I see that the registry key for show status bar is 1. Which means it's supposed to show. And, you know, I've toggled these back and forth. No luck. Okay. Do you have any thoughts about this?
Well, there are a couple of ways to do this. Like you said, in the View tab under Advanced, you can show status bar.
Yeah.
And that will do it.
One of those that should work but isn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something's
not working, which is very weird. That's very weird.
Yeah.
But you can also do it in the registry, and it does show 1. Okay. Does it never show, even if you like drag your cursor to the bottom or any? It never shows.
Never
ever.
Pops up from the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm moving my cursor around the bottom of an active window, and nothing's happening.
You're talking about the bar across the bottom where you have the Windows logo and
no. I'm looking for the thing that says, like, when I select a bunch of files, I'd like to know how many files I've selected, and that's what I'm looking for. You know, like if my memory serves me, in the past they might have said how many bytes you selected, but it's mainly the functionality I'm looking for is when I select a bunch of files for copying or moving or whatever, the status bar would show me how many files I selected.
Right, at the bottom of the window, not at the bottom of the screen.
Yes, the bottom of the window.
And that's not showing anymore.
That's correct.
Wow.
Yeah.
Turn it off. In the view advanced, turn it off, reboot, turn it back on.
Yeah, well, I've done that.
Okay. Yeah.
I've done that numerous times. Okay. Okay, if now that nothing pops in your mind, I'll give you another data point, okay? In the past, I used to use this thing called WinArrow Tweaker, okay, that lets you, like, change icon spacing on a desktop and so on and so forth. One of the things it lets you do that I did not do is it lets you change the font in the status bar. But that's the only functionality that this WinArrow Tweaker would let you use. I uninstalled that using Revo, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I rebooted the computer. Still doesn't come back.
Right.
That's the only thing I can think of that I could have screwed it up.
Let me suggest that you try this.
Yeah.
From the task manager.
Yeah.
Go to Windows Explorer.
Yeah.
And restart it.
Okay. The task manager. And that's Control Alt Delete. Is that what I'm
saying? Yeah.
Okay. Do you want me to do this in real time?
Sure. I may not. If it takes a while, we may just move on. But
yeah,
theoretically, yes. The other one you already tried. That's the only other thing I can think of that might change it.
Yeah. Well, this is not the most critical problem. You want me to go in under processes, change? Is that right? Windows Explorer.
From Task Manager, you want to go to Windows Explorer,
And you want me to end that task?
No, restart it.
Restart it. Okay, done. Okay. And no difference.
Yeah, then it's got to be something that this program you had screwed up. My suggestion would be you reinstall it.
Yeah.
Uninstall it by itself, not with Revo Uninstaller.
Yeah.
See if that fixes it. Then you can always go in with Revo Uninstaller.
And undo it.
And re-uninstall it, which will just get rid of the stuff, the cruft that it left behind in the registry.
Yeah. When I uninstalled it with Revo, I used the advanced method, and I deleted deleted all the tidbits.
That's what you want to do.
But in this particular case, it may be that uninstalling it that way didn't undo everything it had done.
Right. There might be some other settings that it was not relative to this program, but to something else that changed the setting. From say a 0 to a 1 or a 1 to a 0.
Yeah, especially if you went into the registry like you said and set it there, which is all that the checkbox in the GUI does anyway.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well,
so I would suggest that try doing that, reinstall that program, then uninstall it. See if that solves your issue.
Okay. I'll try that. Okay.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
Right. There's
other people are reporting similar issues.
Yeah.
And people are saying you go into advanced and check the box on.
Yep. Or restart the task manager. I don't know. That's very weird, but
something else got mucked up in the middle.
Something else got mucked up. And particularly when you're using any of those third party programs, it screws around with the registry. Lordy, I hate the registry.
That's a technical term too.
I hate the registry. Okay. Yeah, that's a technical term. Mucked around in the registry. Okay, well, so when Apple introduced its controversial MacBook Pro design in 2016, the company probably didn't know it was setting itself up to get sued. But not only is a class action lawsuit now underway for their infamous butterfly keyboards, it looks like there's going to be a second one for the notoriously fragile display cables, too. Judge Edward Davila has decided to let the Flexgate lawsuit go forward, ruling that Apple should have known that they would fail and yet kept selling them anyhow. The court finds that I'll get to that in a minute. No, I won't. So I'll tell you about it. What that is
please do.
When you connect the motherboard, which is underneath the keyboard, to the display, which is a separate half of the computer.
Which goes through a hinge.
The laptop goes through a hinge. And that means that every time you close and then open the laptop again, you're flexing that hinge and you're flexing the cable inside it.
And that's been notorious a problem for all manufacturers.
All manufacturers.
And the laptops that pivot around and fold back down to become a tablet, how the heck do they do that cable?
Yeah, no kidding.
That's got to be contact points.
Yeah, rather than an actual cable.
Where they're actually rotating it and then you're making taking two connectors that are opposite, polar to each other, then you're twisting it, and then they make contact to do it. Because that's the only way you could do it on something like that, because
right.
twisting and bending a cable that much would kill it.
Right. Anyway, the judge wrote in his decision to let this go forward, the court finds that the allegations of pre-release testing, in combination with the allegations of substantial customer complaints, are sufficient to show that Apple had exclusive knowledge of the alleged defect. Part of the Flexgate controversy is how Apple addressed the issue when it first got publicity in late 2018. First, by silently swapping a new, slightly longer cable into newer MacBooks and only opening up one of its typical free repair programs months after 15,000 users signed a petition and it was called out in the press. It's the press that got this done. The company's been a lot more responsive with issues ever since, such as with their free battery replacement program for a small number of those 2016 and 2017 MacBook Pro laptops that won't charge anymore. Unlike the butterfly keyboard suit, the Flexgate one doesn't appear to be a certified class action lawsuit yet, but there are now 9 different plaintiffs lined up in this single case, and the judge is inviting them to submit a new amended complaint. So how's your MacBook Pro holding up? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
And this was the 2016 MacBook Pro.
Right.
And Apple does have a repair extension. What's interesting is that their normal repair extensions are 4 years from original date of purchase. They recently increased that one to 5 years.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
They knew that this was an issue. And you're right. The problem with laptops, well, it's multiple. One is Apple's thinness craze, their absolute deep obsession with thinness, that means that there isn't a lot of room in that hinge.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of extra space there.
And it's such a fine wire.
And it's such
it's a cable. There's like 30 wires in there in that connector.
And it doesn't have to be that fine, except that it has to be for Apple.
Yeah.
Because they've made the thing so thin.
So many parts are in there.
Right.
Yeah.
If you've got a slightly thicker laptop, you can have a slightly thicker cable, and that should last you 10 years.
Yep.
But not Apple's, because they've made everything so thin. And that was the problem with the butterfly keyboard. That's the problem with this cable. It's all that obsession.
There is a list of Apple service programs available that I posted. Apple devices that have known issues that they will repair out of warranty. We sometimes call those a repair extension or service program. And there've been a few of them, a lot of them on batteries, and a lot on keyboards. And this one on the 13-inch MacBook Pro is called a display backlight issue, because the backlight fails after opening
closing. Yeah, again, it's a cable.
It's all in that cable.
But it's not a bad idea to go look at that page every now and then to see if something you own, a problem you're having, maybe have a free extension.
That's exactly right.
Those extensions expire usually after 4 years. And so when we've had people come in fact, that's what's wrong with my phone. There was a repair extension for cellular problems, but it's only for 4 years, and my phone is 5 years old.
Sure, because you didn't bother. See, it's the physician's son, all right? The cobbler's children have no shoes.
Fix myself, yeah. So if you... When you set up your device, from any manufacturer, they usually give you the option to opt into email announcements. A lot of times, that's a good idea, because if you have a registered product that has one of these repair programs on it, they can let you know.
Yep.
Because we hear that all the time. I didn't know there was this program that has expired 3 years ago. Well, if you were on the mail list, you might have had it. And we try to announce them when they come out here on the show. And a lot of the bigger ones, the MacBook Pro 15-inch battery recall actually hit mainstream press, because a lot of airlines started banning computers on planes. because the batteries would swell and overheat and potentially cause pretty bad disasters if you're in the air.
Yep.
But these programs often don't make it to mainstream press. And if you're having a problem, call Apple. Let them have a record of it. So until enough people report the problem, they don't know they should be investigating it.
That's exactly right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Josh from Fairport, New York. Hi, Josh. What's up?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I was listening not too long ago when you guys were talking about back up, and again, back up. So I went ahead and I got pCloud for my 2015 Mac desktop. And I'm enjoying it so far, but I'm not very, you know, inclined, if you will. So I was just wondering, because I had a couple little questions, I went ahead and downloaded the application that was recommended me by the, you know, pCloud itself.
Right.
But after I reset my computer, it was the application's no longer responsive, and it just kind of gets stuck in this little loop where, like, this window pops up and says, you know, pCloud app failed to initialize.
Yep.
And you want to restart, and then you restart it, and it just, you know, I've kind of had this little window on my screen.
This happened after you reset your MacBook, yeah? Your Macintosh.
Yeah.
Uninstall the app, download a clean copy, install it again.
Reinstall it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That should fix the issue. But first, uninstall it.
Okay.
Then download a clean copy and reinstall it. Use your same username and password, and it'll hook right back up again.
Okay.
So it's you don't lose anything.
No
issue.
Of that.
Yeah.
Great. And so when I get that set back up, it's my understanding that it has this almost automated way of allowing you to back things up. You just kind of click and check.
You can make a single folder that you want to go up to to pCloud.
Or multiple folders.
Or you can select multiple folders that you want to go up to. It depends on how much storage you want to buy.
Right. So, for example, it's backing up my music, my pictures, my documents, my Python code. Pretty much everything I actually do on the computer now is all backed up to pCloud, and it happens automatically. And if I move things around, it moves them around. If I delete them, it deletes them. It does the whole nine Ooh. Yards automatically. So
they're having an Easter sale. 2 terabyte lifetime, $500.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah. It's a nice price.
Normally 2,000.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, again, and folks go, oh, that's a lot of money. Well, it depends on how much your data is worth to you. Those, especially the photos. Photos and documents, you know, those, the photos you, documents, yes, you could recreate those if you had to.
Absolutely had to, yeah.
But photos, once they're gone, folks, there's no getting back.
Just have another kid.
Yeah, exactly.
kid, there's 1,000 photos. Second kid, there's 100 photos. Third kid, who cares?
Yeah, but if you try to get, you know, those photos of loved ones, you know, that have gone and have passed away, you can't get them back. They're gone.
And I have to say, my wife and I, we each have a MacBook and a MacBook Pro from around 2009 or 10, so pretty old. And she was having a hard time getting her photos, so I went on, and, you know, it asks, should you adjust the date? Because when it's that old, it just kind of doesn't know what to do after a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
So I left it at the really old, incorrect date, and it allowed me to actually take all the photos and everything from whatever it was, iPhoto, and I just put them on zip drive after zip drive.
And now you're the hero.
Yep, exactly.
Good for you. Now you can store them.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
Yep.
That's right. Well, hey, I appreciate you guys, and I hope you all have a good weekend.
You too.
Stay safe.
Thanks. Bye. Yeah, and as we said at the top of the hour, those of you who only listen to the second hour, for those of you who celebrate in the Western Christian Rite, happy Easter. For those of you who celebrate other things, whatever you celebrate at the vernal equinox, happy whatever that is, and we're good. I know that the Eastern Catholics don't celebrate till May,
right.
Easter till May.
Yeah, we were joking that that today is countdown to some apocalypse because it's 4-3-2-1.
It's 4-3-2-1, but only here in America.
Tomorrow's blast off.
Yep.
In England, it's 3-4-2-1.
Yeah. And there's a the full moon, I think, is either tonight or tomorrow, so we're going to have werewolf bunnies.
Yeah.
Steve, we got a minute here if you want to answer that one text question that we did get in.
You want to read it again for the listening audience?
Is there a way to enlarge the vertical search alphabetically in the context? I enlarge the text size, but the context letters stay the same for my fat fingers.
So there are a couple of options in the iPhone settings, and they're hidden under universal or assistive settings. You can enlarge the text. And sometimes then I see the text falls off the end of the line and doesn't wrap around to a second line, which is a little annoying. And then there's also a zoom option where you can zoom the entire screen. I don't think either of those is what he wants, but,
it's not going to do the trick.
If you zoom the whole screen, it's going to make the icon, the text and the bar bigger as well. And I will post a link on, how to turn those settings on.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. Please vote in the poll. We like to get over 100 votes this week, and it's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Everybody, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Ray.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And we can blame the boss on that one because he put the music in there.
Exactly right. At 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Oh, and we were just talking about when things were invented.
Yeah.
When was the fax machine invented? Dave thought 1950.
Well, that would be the digital fax machine.
Right.
That's what I was thinking of.
He was close. It was 43. 1843. That's when that one was invented. And of course, we then talked about the first time WTF was used.
1917.
No, that was.
OMG.
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 Yeah, OMG was first used in 1917. It's the first known use of OMG. 1917. Obviously not in a text, in a letter. A letter is a text that you used to send people on paper.
Yeah, you print your text out.
No, you handwrite your text out.
Way back when.
You print your text out in traditional print. Hand, right.
Using a thing we used to call a pen.
Yep.
Well, that's one thing that's gone by the wayside is, you know, cursive and everything else. I see some folks handwriting and that type of stuff. It's like, oh.
My handwriting has not changed since I was in my 20s. That's because it was always crappy.
Well, see,
always.
I only sign one thing, you know, as far as cursive, and that's my name.
Right.
Everything else, I always printed because, like you say, I always had crappy handwriting.
Right.
So I learned at a very young age to print. So I can print faster probably than I can, you know, trying to write. So that's why I've gotten to where I only sign my name. And cursive, everything else. And I used to do that even in high school and college. I printed everything, my notes, everything. And the teachers loved it because they could read it.
You're right, right. Well, that's why I learned to type. I learned to type in high school. I actually learned to type in the seminary, actually. But I've always preferred typing because I can read it.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote myself a note the other night, and the next day I looked at it, and all I could think was I had written Korg. Which is one of the characters from the Thor movies. But it probably wasn't Korg.
Okay.
But I don't know who it was.
Okay.
It could have been an R, could have been a K, could have, I don't know what it was supposed
to be. That's why you two have so much problem reading each other's handwriting, announcing names.
That's exactly right. Dave can't print and I can't read. So that works out pretty well.
We've been doing it for 30 years.
Or not doing it, as it were.
Yeah, really.
All right. Oh, moment of silence. A moment of silence, as expected. Microsoft discontinued its Cortana mobile app on Wednesday.
I'm not dead yet.
Yes. Yes, you are. As a result, they've ended all support for third-party Cortana skills and eliminated the Cortana app for iOS and Android devices. For those unfamiliar with Cortana, it is Microsoft's version of Siri or Alexa, the Google Assistant, an AI-based personal assistant that can answer questions and complete small tasks. The mobile version was originally launched in November of 2018, but apparently never gained a user base big enough for in its short lifetime for Microsoft to consider it worth maintaining. As explained in a Microsoft support page, we use this term support loosely here, the mobile app is no longer supported, and reminders and lists are no longer available within the app either, although they can still be accessed through Cortana in Windows. Also, Cortana reminders, lists, and tasks are automatically synced to the Microsoft To-Do app, which is available as a free download on iOS and Android. The planned shutdown of the apps was announced in July of 2020, when Microsoft said it would be, right when we were all paying a whole lot of attention to anything having to do with Microsoft, when Microsoft said it would be shifting toward a transformational AI-powered assistant experience in its Microsoft 365 apps, which would involve refocusing its areas of innovation and development. The company has since improved Cortana's integration with Microsoft 365, such as introducing personalized actionable briefs in Outlook for Exchange users and adding Cortana to the Teams mobile app to do things like manage calendars and email and join meetings. In January of 2021, Microsoft ended support for the Cortana integration in the Harman Kardon Invoke speaker and created a Bluetooth-enabled device transition plan for Invoke users to be able to continue listening to their favorite music, podcasts, and radio stations. In addition, speaker owners who used Cortana are also eligible for a $50 Microsoft gift card. Big whoop. Yeah, which is redeemable up to July 31, 2021.
Whoopie-fa-doopie.
Did you ever use Cortana? Ever? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
What about all the poor developers that stake their company on making Cortana skills?
Too dang bad.
Got to switch to Alexa skills.
I made a number of Alexa skills.
Because nobody's doing Siri skills. That's another problem. We're worried about that. Yeah.
Yeah. I have written a number of Alexa skills. Sorry, I keep using the term, which is probably setting them off all over the place.
Hello, Alexis.
They need to make a skill so call it doesn't soundbite. Accidentally go off.
Yeah, right. Actually, they have one. If you've noticed, when they use the word, the Alaska word, in a commercial, it doesn't set off the device. Mm-hmm. And that's because there's a tone they play under it
that the device hears
and then does not respond.
Okay.
Well, that's according to Tom's Guide, there are 100,000 current skills.
Yep.
And here are the 30 best ones.
I'm not in that list, by the way. Just so you know. All right, we have a text message.
Yeah,
we
got a question here. It says, "Hello, gentlemen." I don't know who he's talking to.
Yeah, it must be wrong. wrong number.
That's what I was just going to say. I usually listen to you via Google Assistant. Today, it refuses to let me in. Says, "I cannot do that here. I have tried numerous times. Is the problem at my end or yours? I have no problem receiving you on my phone. Listen to Google Assistant last night."
It is not impossible that there's an issue. If people are listening through the stream, which is how the Google Assistant gets it, if somebody's listening through the stream, please let us know. Obviously, we cannot tell in here.
Yeah.
But if somebody's listening through the stream, let us know. I would also like whoever that texter was to tell us what they say to get the Google Assistant to play the stream so that other people can try it. Again, we don't have a Google Assistant that'll connect in here.
No. He didn't include the name, so...
Right. But whoever that is, whoever sent that in, If you can tell us what you say, generally it's something.
The web stream is currently working.
The web stream is working. We know that. It might be a problem with whatever. So, for example, if you're listening to it through TuneIn, there may be a TuneIn issue. Why don't I go?
A lot of times you have to add the service to your question. So it's hey, G, listen to Soundbites Radio Podcast on TuneIn.
Mm-hmm.
You have to sign
up. Yeah, but if he was actually listening last night.
Yeah, he said he had no problem listening to.
There are almost no problems with TuneIn if you're listening to it through that.
Okay.
Unfortunately, that's one of those
too many things we don't have
that much do here.
Too many variables that we don't have a clue.
Right. But I would like to know what you say to Google Assistant.
Here we go.
There it is.
This just in.
This is, Penna. I say, hey, Google, play WGMC.
Yeah, in the YouTube chat.
Play WGMC.
Archandra says he does it on Roku in the TuneIn app by saying play WGMC, which is the call letters that we never use.
Right. It's Jazz 90.1, but it's WGMC, the Grease something.
Music.
No, Grease Management. Grease.
It's in the top of the hour disclaimer.
Yeah, it is. Whatever that is. Clearly, we don't listen to anything.
We're racing to the
during
restroom.
The top of the hour. Yeah, we're racing. We have other. We have more important things on
Grease
our planet.
Community broadcasters.
There you go.
That's not WGMC. Right.
And somebody sent something here. It says, Steve, please replay via text. Will a factory reset of the iPhone reset the statistics date to the date of the factory reset?
As far as I know, it would reset it to today's date, whatever date you do the reset on. But I haven't actually tried that. And then if you restore from backup, it may restore that date from your backup.
Yeah, the simple fact is that date is not a reliable indication of anything.
Yeah.
It is not a definitive date of anything.
They also tell you that's not a reliable indicator of how much data you used. You should log into your cellular account to be sure.
Right.
Because there have been issues where, my cellular statistics say I've got 9 gigs and I got charged for 10 gig overage. Well, because it hadn't collected the last gig and hadn't started displaying it yet. And, you really did go over.
Yep. There is no reliable indicator on the iPhone. Or on the Android phone, of when a system was reset.
Yeah, on the iPhone, there is a way that a service provider can say, they call it the first unbrick or first activation, so they know when that phone was first turned on.
But that's separate from your reset.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's when the phone was first turned on, not when you first turned it on.
Right. So if somebody in the factory turned it on to test that particular one, that's the one they randomly picked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, there is no way to tell when reliably when a phone was last reset.
Yeah.
There just isn't. I actually looked that up after our last lounge meeting. Oh, there will not be. There you go. That's the thing I wanted to remind everybody. There will be no Soundbites Lounge tomorrow night.
It's Easter.
I will be cavorting with the Easter Bunny, and I will not be in the lounge, so it will not start. But normally, every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time.
It's past my bedtime.
Which is well past your bedtime because you're old and you get up at 2 in the morning. Every Sunday night at 9 p.m., we host the Soundbites Lounge. And if you go to soundbites.org/lounge, you'll see a link at 9 o'clock on Sunday night to get you into that chat. And we have a free ranging discussion. Sometimes we talk about movies. Sometimes we answer computer questions. Dan was in, on Sunday and we answered some questions there. There is no way to tell reliably and definitively, it really is the important word there, definitively when a phone was reset.
I did just find an app that will tell you your current boot time, your uptime.
That
since
nothing.
It is Unix underneath there. But, yeah,
right, that but that still is.
And you can't get to a terminal on the phone.
Right. On your phone, maybe.
Yeah.
But at any rate, there's no way to know that. But like I said, normally on Sunday nights, we have the Soundbites Lounge, sponsored by Mastermind Lounge. God bless them. And everybody's welcome anytime, except this Sunday, of course. It's Easter. We're not going to be there. But normally on Sundays, we do that. Everyone is welcome. Go to soundbites.org/lounge. And at 9 o'clock on a Sunday night, 9 o'clock Eastern time, a link will appear. And if you read through that page, it'll show you how it's real easy. You go through an echo test where, you know, you can hear your microphone. And then you just connect and you're there. It could hardly be simpler. And unlike Zoom, we don't have a 40-minute time limit. And unlike Zoom, it is much, much more secure. Except that in that particular case, I'm telling everybody where to go, where they can go. So it's not as secure as you might think. But I can block people and do all that stuff.
So I got to ask you. Yeah. Did you wind up getting the Raspberry Pi?
No, I did not. Everybody keeps asking me this.
Well,
I am being
only
strong.
No, the reason I have to ask is because I was getting this close thinking, well, Nick's going to get one. Maybe I should get it so then we can compare notes and play around with it. And
then you can complain, well, Nick bought one. Honey, why can't I get one?
right.
No, I think this way we can commiserate, you know, as far as talking back and forth. Well, I did this, I did that. Because like I say, I want to get that Twister OS on a Raspberry Pi 4, but I couldn't be easily convinced to put it on a 400.
The difference between the 4 and the 400, the 400 is a slightly faster processor, but it only comes with 4 gig of RAM. There is an 8 gig Raspberry 4, but not an 8 gig Raspberry 400
yet.
And that would be the thing that absolutely pushed me over the edge.
Now, there, just so this is only relative to folks in ham radio, but there is a group and ham radio that they get on at night on Sunday nights at 5 and they talk Raspberry Pi. And there's one guy out west, he's really big into the Raspberry Pis. And this whole group just talks about Raspberry Pis all night for 2.5 hours.
Do they have a website or anything that we could post for other people?
I'll have to double check because maybe they've got a stream and I just fell upon it a couple weeks ago. And like I said, there's one guy out there in Nevada that does a lot with Raspberry Pis. The gentleman that runs the net is in England, and he is good friends with the folks that own and operate Raspberry Pis.
Yeah.
And he said, which he's under strict rules and regulations right now because they invited him over because he's a good friend.
Non-disclosure.
And, you know, showed him what is on the drawing board, and he goes, you folks are going to be amazed.
Well, there's rumors about a 5.
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody was saying, well, Pi Day, right? March 14th.
Yeah.
Pi Day, they'll be introducing the new Pi. And somebody at Raspberry Pi said, I don't know where that rumor came from, but it certainly didn't come from us.
Yeah.
And,
no.
Of course, nothing was introduced on the Pi Day.
At the April Fool's pranks were very subdued this year.
Yeah, they were.
Think Geek is gone.
Did you hear what the First Lady did?
No.
Oh, the First Lady, she pulled the best. She was on her way back on April Fool's Day back, and evidently she went to the back part of the plane because nobody knew that she was on, and put on this a wig and costume and went up and down the aisle handing out ice cream bars. At the end.
Dressed up as a flight attendant.
Yes. And then when she got to the end, all of a sudden she took off the wig and people couldn't believe.
That's hysterical.
I mean, what a class.
I thought the Secret Service was going nuts about how did this lady get on the plane.
Yeah, right. Right.
I mean, what a cool.
That's very cool.
You know,
that's
we've never heard, you know, a first lady, you know.
Right.
But they're down to earth people.
They are down to earth people.
And
that's
yeah,
very
she
funny.
Pulled off the wig, and everybody, you know, in total shock because they were all stunned. They didn't know who it was.
Yeah, right, right, right. That's very funny.
As
that's
a good
very
April
funny.
Fool's joke.
One of the hobby companies did a full blown, you know, ad, you know, new product announcement for a stealth submarine. And they showed you get this really great controller with it, and they kept showing pictures of the lake, and you know it's got this feature and this feature, and then they go to an empty shot of the lake.
Nice,
the stealth submarine.
Very nice.
And they already make cars and trains and planes and boats, so why not a submarine?
There's a YouTube channel, of course, for everything. There's a guy who cuts shoes in half and shows you how they're built.
Mm-hmm.
And for April Fool's this year, he cut apart a pair of clogs.
Did he count the rings?
And I'm a little surprised. It seems that the heel is made of wood. And the sole appears to be made of wood.
Yeah.
And the arch, I'm kind of surprised there's no wedge in here. Oh, there's a wedge. It's made of wood. And the uppers are made of wood, and the welt is made of wood, and the tongue is made of wood. It was just very funny. So I went back and looked at last April Fool when he did the same thing with a pair of Crocs. It appears the heels are plastic. And he said, "You see all the bumps on the inside? That's Braille." It was very funny.
There have been some that ThinkGeek used to have the best April Fool's yeah. jokes, and then they got bought by somebody and pretty much destroyed. And,
yeah, it's all gone.
And some of them were so good. They made one unicorn meat in a tin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they called themselves the other white meat.
Right.
And apparently the National Pork Council sued them, and their response was, "You do know there are no such things as unicorns." But one of the best ones they did was a video arcade cabinet for the iPad that made your iPad look like a video arcade. It had a little joystick on it.
And right.
They got so many people wanting to order that.
They made it.
They actually went and made one. Yeah.
Yep. All right. And now, doggone you, Enright. Now I want one again. I'm sitting here staring at the Raspberry Pi.
I'm blaming it on
I've
you.
Been good. I haven't bought a new airplane this year at all.
Yeah. It's only March.
Yeah, I was going to say flight season.
I have not bought an airplane this year.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
But when does the flying season start? Oh, next month.
Actually, last Saturday was really, really good, but it didn't have any batteries charged.
Yeah, I bet it was. So I'm looking at it, $100, $130 if I want 128
and get
gig
an
drive
SSD
for it.
Drive for it.
I could get a 500 gig drive for $85.
Go for a terabyte. SSD.
Yeah.
It's not that much more.
Yeah.
But even with just the 128 gig.
Yeah.
SSD.
Like you said, I'm trying to hold out.
SanDisk, basically.
Because from what this guy was saying, though, it sounds like something is going to be out by summer.
There is going to be a 5. We know there's going to be a 5. We just don't know anything about it yet.
Right. And I'm... Like I say, he's very tight-lipped about it, which, yep. You know, I respect. And
yes,
everybody,
I can wait.
And everybody in the group, but he just says, you won't be disappointed. And okay, hey, I trust
I'm closing
him.
This tab. I can wait.
But I'll let you know if I learn any more.
Yeah.
I saw a guy that had a T-shirt, had an upside-down Nike logo, and it was, I can't do it.
Yeah,
I can wait. No, I can't.
So anywhere, but to get back to an earlier thing, anybody who's got a Roku or any one of the smart assistants can listen to this show online. And in fact, if you go to the Soundbites webpage, you can see that we have both the Google and Amazon devices there, and you can just say play Jazz 901. On TuneIn, and it should work. Or WGMC, you can say play WGMC. There's really a bunch of different ways you can manage that. But you don't have to be listening in the radio. You don't have to be listening through your computer. If you're in a room with a device, you're on your way there. All right, that's it. We're done for another week. We still haven't hit 100 votes. in the poll. So for those of you who haven't gotten there yet, get off the stick.
Let me vote again.
You can't vote twice. But thank you very much for everybody who did vote. We want to thank everybody who called in. Thanks a lot. Everybody who texted in, thank you. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. You have been listening to the you are still, in fact, for the next couple of seconds, listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, 31 years, 7 months, and 0 days. On the great and grateful to you that we continue with your generous support to be member supported. Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in just 166 hours.